drink is a straw. Just sit it down, have a nice long straw, and just drink as you talk.
That's not a bad idea, but the microphone would pick up the slurping. I can't have a slurping podcast. It's actually snowing here, too. It's crazy. It was 80 degrees a couple days ago, and it's snowing here. Is it snowing where you are?
You're in the Carolinas, right?
Yeah.
I mean, one of those. I just grouped them together.
One of two, yeah.
It hasn't. We're supposed to get about a foot of snow on Tuesday.
You probably are going to. Well, I don't know weather systems, but it might be the same system as heading up there. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think it is.
Very slowly. But yeah, it's not going to stick, though, because it's going to be 80 again in a few days. All right, well, let's do this show thing. How do you guys feel about it?
Yeah, good.
I'm very excited.
We're good. All right, well, okay, we have, this is episode 8, kind of flying by here. So I'm going to go around alphabetically. We have what should be a familiar face, voice, noise. A familiar noise. Doug McCambridge. It's been a little while since we've talked, hasn't it?
It has. I think the player, right? Criterion Close-Up, the
That's
player?
That's right, yeah.
I think it was the last time.
So, yeah, that was the last time.
Yeah, I was upset that I missed my first invite due to illness, but I'm excited to be here today.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. So Doug does Great Times, Good Movies podcast. Mm-hmm. Kind of the Plain Archive stuff. I don't know what's going on with that.
You know, let's just... It's on hiatus...
Okay.
Indefinitely. I haven't gotten a lot of outrage from people that I stopped doing it, which makes me think, well, you know what? Was anybody really listening anyway? But
I enjoyed it. I especially like Erica's episode the best. That was great.
I think that was my favorite one. Not to play favorites, but no, hey, if I'm never going to do it again, what does it matter?
You can play favorites.
Yeah.
It's okay. I
enjoyed doing it. It was... being solely responsible for a podcast was way more work than I thought it was. I mean, at least in Good Times, Great Movies, I have somebody else there, and I don't have to do a lot of research. It's so silly and so goofy.
Mm-hmm.
We just talk, but for this, I had to research, and I had to find guests, and I had to book them, and I don't know. It was great. I teach, so I have my summers open, so I banked probably the first 7 or 8 episodes then. The only thing that I feel bad about is I recorded an episode with Dave Eves,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was supposed to be episode 14, and I'm never going to get to that, I guess.
But,
maybe I'll just release that.
Yeah, you just you can go out and order it. Or, you know, I'm kind of like our close-up. We just record what we want. You could just not be slave to the spines. Because I really want to do Zero Dark Thirty. I actually have some opinions. That's a movie I get into political philosophy and history and all sorts and politics. So yeah,
you know what? You're kind of talking me into it. Maybe I'll this summer. Let's just
this summer. Right.
Summer return.
You heard it here. It's coming back. Anything coming up on Great Times, Good Movies?
It's Good Times, Great Movies. Not that it really matters.
Yeah, that's right. They're not. But they're not great movies.
No. Normally they're not. But it's a podcast about 80s movies. Normally bad ones. Currently we just... I think our current episode is Mannequin, which is terrible.
Yeah, I remember.
But the next episode is our 48th episode, so we're doing 48 hours. So I'm hoping that that'll at least be a higher quality. Oh, come on, Eddie Murphy in his prime, great.
Yeah, I think that probably holds up. It's been a while, so. All right, well, our next guest is a new voice, Jameson McGonigal. Did I get that right?
You nailed it.
Jameson, you kind of made some waves in the Criterion sphere maybe about 2-3 months ago. I might have the timing wrong, because I think an article circulated saying the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford was coming to Criterion, and one guy said so, or one guy was lobbying on its behalf. And so you probably, it's kind of like a game of telephone. Everybody says, you know, they just kind of extrapolate what they want, and then they conclude this movie's coming to Criterion. And then I think you walked that back a little bit. So do you want to, first off, tell us what your what you're all about, what this project's about, what you do, and then I'd like to hear your take on this controversy.
Yeah, well, it seems like every time the movie comes up, ever since I embarked on this, there's a bit of controversy. I guess I'll go back to the beginning. Basically, I was collecting 35 millimeter prints of films for quite a while. After a while in New York, you don't really have the space to do so. I was in New York at the time. One day, a print of that became available. It was a movie that just I had been obsessed with since I saw it in theaters. I saw it in theaters 5 times.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just one of those movies that stuck and always felt like it was going to be a classic to me pretty much from the first time I saw it. And I think a lot of people felt that way. And then, you know, a lot of people didn't see it or didn't.
Yeah,
pretty much.
It didn't do that.
Pretty much nobody.
It disappointed.
Yeah, pretty much nobody saw it. So all those years later when I got the print, initially I was just going to kind of screen it privately in the lead up to my wedding. And then I had this kind of crazy idea that, hey, why don't I reach out to Andrew Dominic and see if he'll fly out and we do a pretty cool screening with him. And, you know, it was just going to be kind of a one-off thing. I tracked him down. I pitched that idea to him, essentially kind of framing it as like, you know, a bachelor party without the, you know, strippers and all that. and he countered with, you know, why wouldn't you get strippers, you know? And then from there we had a bit of a back and forth, and as I sat on it, it's hard to explain where the idea for turning it into the grassroots thing that it came from. But I started talking to the venue where I got married, which is the Museum of the Moving Image in New York City. Which is like a proper, you know, repertory house and museum. And I kind of asked the curator there, David Schwartz, if he would be open to maybe doing a public screening of the movie as part of a, you know, sort of an opportunity to put the movie back on everybody's radar. I wanted to sort of give it a platform to become, you know, like a repertory title. Because ever since the movie had come out, nobody really ever showed it in a repertory capacity after that. So that was the goal at that point. Like one screening, get some press, let the movie kind of have a life again. I talked to Andrew about it, Andrew Dominic, and he was willing to come to New York and do a screening and do a Q&A. So we did that, and we got tons of press, which was unexpected. The New York Times ended up talking to me about it.
Wow.
We sold out completely the first night, which I didn't expect. And the museum was like, hey, you want to do a second night? And I was, yeah. And I said, sure. And it just so happened that Ron Hansen, the author of the book, was coming through town. I don't know why. I think maybe for just to see some of his colleagues. I contacted him. I got his information from Andrew. And I said, hey, we're going to show Jesse James, you know, the next day. And he was open to coming and introducing the film that night. Andrew had to go back to Los Angeles. So we did another screening and sold out that one. So that's when it felt like we had a bit of traction to maybe do more with it, and that it could be something bigger.
Yeah, I love the film. I remember when it came out, and I think the people that I am affiliated with really loved it, but I think just box office, and the critics liked it as well. I think Deacon's got a nomination, if I remember. I think maybe...
Yeah.
I also love Nick Cave, too, so I love the soundtrack. But yeah, I think it's kind of one of those cult... It's become, you know, a recent cult film in that it's just developed an audience, you know, kind of like the people that get into Malick or Kubrick. I could see that resonated with them.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised that it's successful.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of the reason I thought I'd be able to, you know, pull off a screening like that is it was actually directly tied to Criterion.
Yeah. So how does that work?
Well, back then, before I did it, I think even some of it might have been on Criterion Cast. I would see people posting fake covers for it on a pretty semi-regular basis.
Not on Criterion Cast, but go ahead.
I forget where it was, but...
I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. It's definitely not on Criterion Cast.
Right, but... So it's not on Criterion Cast, but it was somewhere.
Maybe Reddit.
I saw about seven of them. So I knew there were people out there that felt the same way about it that, you know, that I do. Mm-hmm. And that people wanted in the collection. It became part of the long game of the screening series to continue to screen the film and show that people would not only turn out, but that we could, like, sell out venue after venue after venue.
Right. And, there's an audience.
Yeah, we had a big social media campaign, and a lot of people would bring up Criterion, like, independently of us. So it seemed like sort of a natural thing to start pursuing.
Absolutely.
And Andrew has a director's cut of the film that he prefers, so that seems sort of like the natural pitch, you know? He actually has two cuts of the film he prefers, one that's shorter as well, oddly enough.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah. So we ended up doing a screening in Los Angeles as well the next year at the Egyptian Theater, which is like a 650-seat venue, which we sold out and turned away like a 50-person standby line. So that was another...
Nice.
That was another one of those, like... really big moments that kind of felt like we're on the right track. We had Andrew Dominik and Roger Deakins at that screening, which is pretty amazing.
Very cool.
Yeah. So I met Roger Deakins, which was, you know, it's just one. I'm just like, I can't even talk right
it's,
now.
It's a geek orgasm.
Yeah. he's a super, super cool guy. And a bunch of people involved with the movie came out. And then after that, we started talking to some of them to see if they would be interested in, you know, participating if we were going to go down the road of Criterion or, you know, a home video release. Mm-hmm. And they were all enthusiastic about it.
I bet. So when's it happening?
So basically, a while after that, I actually got to go to Criterion and take the tour. Not in that context. They knew I wanted to do it, but a mutual friend hooked me up with somebody who does restoration there. So he kind of took me around independently, but I didn't meet any of, you know, the producers or Peter or, you know, any of the people that I would have had the substantive conversation about actually doing something with. So after that, I've sort of been pursuing... as much as you can with something that's, you know, a curated collection, pursuing a conversation with anybody there, just to get sort of a sense of where we're coming from with, you know, everything that we have available in terms of the cut, the people that would be willing to participate in supplements, which is quite a few people from the movie.
I bet.
And we feel like we have a really strong package we could do with everything that we have. And there's clearly an appetite for it.
So what's the studio for the film?
It's Warner Brothers.
Oh, okay. Well,
so early on, one of the things we faced was Warner Brothers and Criterion weren't really, you know, doing business. But then, you know, obviously a couple years ago, they've started doing Warner titles. So I tried to sort of reinitiate that conversation.
Yeah, that needs to happen. It seems like all the parts are there, and I think it would be a huge seller. I think it'd be up there with, say, maybe not quite The New World, but I could see it being in that vicinity.
Oh, it would be a huge commercial hit, I believe, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, for them, I think it would be great business-wise.
So I think we should officially kick off the letter-writing campaign. I don't know if... I think maybe people from Criterion listen to this. I don't know. But if they do, make it happen, guys.
I was going to clarify what I clarified in the Criterion forum brought up at the beginning. Yeah. So actually what happened was Andrew was interviewed for One More Time with Feeling, his Nick Cave documentary that came out last year.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody asked him just two questions about Jesse James at the end with regards to Criterion. He basically told them that he thought it was dead in the water, that we had pursued it, and that I had spoken to somebody at Criterion, and that they had basically finally given me like a flat, no, we're not going to do it. So then the playlist actually picked it up, the article you're referring to.
Right.
And they've been big champions of Jesse James Revival and the idea of it being a Criterion. So he took that and turned it into a lead story, basically kind of declaring that idea as sort of impossible at this point. So I went on Criterion Forum and I wrote that big piece, basically sort of clarifying that while we've like submitted proposals to them in the past, we've submitted two, but through intermediaries, people who knew people, you know, a guy who knew a guy at Criterion would, you know, pass something along and I would never hear anything. I'm at the point where I'm really desperate to speak to, you know, one of the producers or Peter Becker or anyone around him that is at the level of Criterion where we could have a conversation about, you know, what would it take to license the film? Mm-hmm. What we could bring to the table in terms of putting together a package and like finally having a real conversation that could finally give us an answer of like, are we going to do this or not? So the short of that is they've never actually said no. We've never actually talked about it.
Okay.
It's just been sort of this thing out in the ether, mm-hmm. where they're very aware of it because people write to suggestions at criterion.com all the time on our
right.
behalf. And I always hear about it from them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, on the Criterion side, obviously, you know, it's a curated collection. I don't, the thing I've always tried to say is I don't expect to be, you know, walk through the doors and just have a Criterion. Obviously, they pick their titles very carefully, and I respect that. But there's obviously demand for it, and I think it would be a conversation worth having. That's basically my take on it at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and just speculation, maybe a little bit of informed speculation, because I pay attention to this stuff way too much, but I think they do have a pretty big backlog. I think they, especially with Warner's, they probably have a pretty large inventory. So I have a feeling that they would not say no, absolutely, that if this is on their radar and there's interest that and they can get it, I think they probably would.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just coming out with blow ups. So, and there's mm-hmm. more Warner's titles coming out. So I wonder if that's it.
That's true.
But it's fascinating. And, I wish we could just keep talking about that because it's great, but I need to move along to the other rest of the show. So let's segue. You guys ready?
Yeah.
I'm ready.
All right. Well, we always start with a bummer, and this week we had a big bummer. This is not a character from Criterion or an actor, but we lost TCM's Robert Osborne this week. And you know, it's just seen on social media, it seemed like people were really crushed about this. And I felt, you know, I've seen his introductions for, I don't know what, the past 10, 15 years, 20 years. It's basically like, you know, somebody that's in your living room that, mm-hmm. That you feel close to and you feel, he's very affable and charming guy. So I think this one hurt a lot. Are you guys, well, I'll start with you, Doug. Are you a Robert Osborne fan or did this affect you much?
Yeah, definitely. I think I really jumped into and dug into TCM probably about 10 years ago, 2000, even longer, 2003, 2004. And I think you're spot on with his demeanor was the thing that I really gravitated toward. And it felt like my grandfather introducing these movies to me. And it was just wonderful. And like you said, he just felt like he was in your living room. Did he inform me any more of the films? Not really. If I read his writings, which I did from time to time, I thought it was great. But just having him there, just the intros and the outros to these movies was wonderful. And it got to the point where when I then watched stuff on demand, if it didn't have his intro, I was kind of bummed out. I don't know. It's going to take some getting used to. I mean, this past year,
yeah,
they had guest programmers and everybody else filling in. But it really is. It is going to take a little while for me to realize, oh, he's not there anymore.
Yeah, they have Mankiewicz, and I, mm-hmm. you know, he's fine. I like him. Okay, he'll do. But I get the impression from, and I follow the TCM family mm-hmm. and TCM party on Twitter some, and I get the impression that people see him as a little more prickly. Are you a fan of either Jameson? Are you a TCM guy?
Definitely a TCM guy. I grew up watching it. I sort of feel the same way Doug does. I mean, I never really felt like I was necessarily learning something when he was introducing a film, mm-hmm. but it was sort of like a warm blanket every time before I would watch the movie. It was just like, you know, if you watched it enough, you sort of, yeah, he did sort of feel like, you know, some third grandfather, like ushering into a great film, and it was always such a, how did I was, it's kind of hard to quantify actually for me. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things where you turn on TCM and you expect him to be there, and then when he started taking leave. Everyone probably inferred that, you know, eventually he wouldn't be there, but even then I was still like, he'll be back, mm-hmm. you know, he'll be back and everything will be normal and it'll be great. So yeah, this one stung for me. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. I think we all saw the writing on the wall. He missed the TCM fests, would take leaves, and by the way, his introductions, he would just fly to Atlanta and just record them all. So they're very, very brief, and I think he probably, there were staffers that wrote for them. So it probably wasn't a 40-hour job, but still, he is somebody that a lot of people adore, and I'm one of them. So I'm definitely going to miss him. Yeah. I haven't been watching TCM lately. I don't know. Who's been doing? I kind of wonder if they'll keep doing that. I'm sure Mankiewicz will have a presence. They might find somebody else, or they have a couple other guest hosts.
Yeah. But. I mean, it's been all Mankiewicz as far as I've seen.
Yeah.
So far. Yeah.
All right. Well, that is a bummer. Sorry for opening that wound, guys. But no, we really will miss Robert Osborne. That was kind of a stunner, even though, mm-hmm. yeah, it wasn't out of nowhere, but it kind of hurt. So, well, there was a little. This is a little more upbeat. There was a tweet by somebody named Odd Hesbert, maybe, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And there was a director, Bertrand Bonello, showed up at the Criterion Collection, and I don't know if this was meant to be tweeted, but there were some photos on the wall, kind of, very much like the ones that we gleaned out of the Apu trilogy that showed the 3 months. 4 months, 3 days, 3 weeks, 2 days. Mm-hmm. I can't get my calendar right. Which still hasn't happened. So anyway, he's looking at a bunch of process prints for covers, and there were some clues there. There were some we know are coming. There's Buena Vista Social Club, Woman of the Year, Tampopo. I think Rumblefish was on there. Maybe Ghost World. I think Othello was on there. But then the interesting ones, there were three interesting ones. There was Stalker, and Stalker, it's no secret, that's coming. Mm-hmm. It's clear in the newsletter, it's on Filmstruck, so it's coming. There's also Straw Dogs, which is a DVD. Is that out of print?
It's out of print, yeah.
Yeah, so that's weird. And then there's the Albert Brooks, which one was it?
Lost in America.
Lost in America, yes. I love that movie, yeah. So, yeah, that's the one where they go to Vegas. Yeah, it's... So, anyway, that was quite a bombshell. Now, I'd caution people, don't get too carried away, because, remember, the 4 months, 3 weeks hasn't happened yet. I kind of wonder if maybe Criterion said, all right, bad community for finding this out, and we're going to hold this from you. So, Doug, thoughts on any of these three? What do you think?
I mean, I'm excited for all of them, of course. I mean, I want Stalker more than anything. I've held off on buying that Tarkovsky box set from Artificial Eye, right?
Yeah. That's wise.
Right, and I think that I don't want to say worst, but the least good restoration was to Stalker, and that's the whole reason I would buy that set anyway. I mean, not that I don't enjoy the other films, but you know what? I already have Solaris, and that's my favorite anyway.
Sure.
So I'm most excited about that. Lost in America is okay. It's not the Albert Brooks film that I would most want to have.
Mm-hmm.
But Straw Dogs.
Real life or Defending Your Life?
I would love Defending Your Life, but yeah. I can't. You know what? I should have written down the titles.
It's okay. It's fine.
But Straw Dogs, yeah. Who wouldn't take Straw Dogs either? Yeah, I'm very excited for these.
Yeah, it's pretty Straw Dog Peckinpah. So it's pretty harrowing. It's intense movie. Jameson, do you have any thoughts on these three?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for them all as well. I have the Straw Dogs DVD, and it's a great set, and I've been hoping for an upgrade for a long time. So that was a pleasant surprise, especially because they ended up doing a kind of dumpy studio release DVD of it. Blu-ray of it a while back, which I bought anyway because I love Straw Dogs. But I'm definitely most excited for Stalker as well. It's like pretty much the same deal as Doug. I kind of figured eventually it would happen, so I held off on buying any other release. And it's always looked like garbage on home video.
The Kino one, yeah.
Oh yeah, so it's nice that it's finally in the right hands. So I'm very excited for that.
And I know there's always a lot of commentary about covers, and it's really tough to see a cover to really get a feel for a cover from a little small tweet of six small prints. But just for it kind of seems fitting just from that little. Mm-hmm. Thumbnail basically of it. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful cover. Now, of course, when we see the full version, probably everybody will hate on it. That's okay. The Lost in America cover looked pretty good too. But again, you know, these are process prints. And Straw Dogs looked like you'd expect. Dustin Hoffman in profile, or not quite like half of his face. So.
Oh, and Modern Romance was the film I was thinking about. Sorry.
Yeah,
that's a good film. One. Yeah. I love that one.
And there's another combo. They took a few photos, which they probably shouldn't have done. I'm sure Criterion's probably slapped their hands. But there's some other process prints, but I don't know how accurate these are. They look like comic book drawings. And there was one for Ledoulous, so that's the Melville, which... and I don't know if that's one that's out of print or not, a lot of those are. I wouldn't put a lot of stock into that, but I think because we're all waiting for Le Samurai, and I think that's been rumored for like 2 years, but that would be nice to see if we can. All right, well, we had a couple releases. We had kicked Mildred Pierce down the curb a little bit for a couple weeks. So, and we also covered the first part of the Before trilogy. We covered Sunrise last week. And this week, 45 Years came out, which I think, actually, mine was delayed from Amazon. It was the first time ever. I got it Friday, so I sure didn't have a chance to dive into it. But let's have a brief conversation about Mildred Pierce. Start with you, Doug. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I actually watched the release, and going back to TCM, it's one of those films that I looked at and I said, I can't wait to watch this. And I put it in, and in about 10 minutes I went, oh, I saw this on TCM years ago. But it's an enjoyable release. I watched all the... extras and it's stacked, and I enjoy the film, definitely.
Yeah, I actually put it off for a while because that's one thing with Criterions is I've watched a lot of movies, and I recorded an Eclipse Viewer yesterday, and we had this very same conversation. But it's funny how you you've seen a lot of movies and you kind of have an opinion of them, and then you see them 10 years later on this immaculate, crystal clear print, and your opinion just completely changes. So I had said previously that Joan Crawford was the worst thing about this movie. I'm going to walk that back. I wouldn't say loved it, but I really, really enjoyed, I mean, there's so much story in this, so much, and the print looks magnificent. Mm-hmm. I mean, even usually these classic Hollywood prints that Criterion gets look pretty good, but this one looked even better. And yeah, it was a stacked release, yeah. So I was a great addition. And I hadn't seen the Todd Haynes version, but there's so much plot in this movie that I really want to see it. Now, have you guys seen that?
I haven't. I didn't even know there was one.
Yeah, it's a miniseries he did for HBO. So
I had no idea.
So Jameson, are you a Mildred Pierce fan, or have you watched the Blu-ray yet?
It's funny you mentioned the 10 years thing, because I saw it about 10 years ago, also on CCM, I think. And I thought it was okay. I think I watched it on sort of like a film noir binge. I think they were doing some sort of noir week, and it's not really a traditional noir, so I think I was kind of, yeah, this is fine kind of thing. But then I watched it with my wife when the disc came, and I loved it. I really loved it. And I felt sort of the same way about Joan Crawford before. I thought, you know, I know she won the Oscar, and when I originally saw it, I was like, you know, it's probably just a sort of a makeup Oscar type thing, but I think she's great in the movie. I had a totally different reaction to the movie this time. Yeah, I think it's a really intricate, interesting story. It's quite a feminist story for the 40s. Which was kind of over my head at the time when I saw it originally. And Anne Blythe is wicked and fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think actually Joan Crawford really, and in fact, a lot of her roles, I'd say Johnny Guitar for sure, she tends to be the empowered female. And I think for the, mm-hmm. you know, for classic Hollywood, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s even, that's kind of an anomaly. You don't see that much, but it's certainly the case here. And I that's a good observation that it's not really a true noir. It has noir elements, and it's almost like it's bookmarked with noir. The beginning and ending are kind of noirish, but then the middle is all flashbacks of things happening. That's more drama, almost melodrama, in a way. So it's very unique, and I understand why it's so special. And I'm glad. Thank you for giving me that opportunity, Criterion. Yeah, and I watched the documentary on Joan Crawford, and it is tough for me to remove the coat hanger or wire hanger. That kind of succeeded, but yeah, I think she, as a person, kind of a tough one to get around. And I think that actually comes out in her role. She comes off as very tough, especially as she got older. So maybe that's, you know, part of her personal life, and the documentary had her daughter there too, mm-hmm. speaking pretty frankly. Yeah. So,
and I think it's tough to sort of buy her as that Susie homemaker, which she is in the film for a brief time. I think that's the most challenging part of this movie, is just looking at her and going,
I'd like to see your closet, woman. So. Yeah, no, I'm glad you guys liked it. It did get high marks, but it was one of those I just procrastinated, and mm-hmm. I'm glad I dived into it. Well, and then the next one is one that's extremely special to me, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but I'll start this time with you, Jameson. Before Sunset, have you had a chance to watch from the Criterion box set, or I'm sure you'd seen it before, but are you a fan?
I'm a huge fan. These films are really special to me. I got the box, and I actually haven't watched them yet. This was another series I ushered my wife into at a certain point.
Good.
And even though they were available, this is before midnight. I actually made her wait after Before Sunrise for like, I don't remember how long, maybe a year before we watched it, to give her some sort of, you know, like the passage of time feeling. But yeah, they're just. All three are extraordinary films to me. I know a lot of people aren't as crazy about Midnight, but I think Midnight's a great film as well, and has a really beautiful ending that you can kind of read a couple mm-hmm. different ways. But going back to Sunset, I think it's the best one of the three. I think it's kind of a perfect movie. His entry into the movie and like sort of the breezy time they have together that leads up to that ending. I don't want to spoil for anyone.
It's quite an ending. Yeah, no, definitely don't. You don't want to spoil that one.
It's such a special movie. Everybody should see all three. And what you did with regards to Sunset's really cool, and I'll leave that to you.
Oh yeah, I'll get into that in a second. But Doug, have you dipped into this box set yet?
Yeah, I have. I actually watched all three of them. And Aaron, if you now want to cut my mic, you can, because I'm not gonna praise the. I don't. These movies, and I think we're now. I don't know about you, Jamison, but Aaron, you and I are roughly the same age, mm-hmm. close at least.
Yeah.
So I grew up with these films. When I saw the first one, I was about that same age, and when I saw the second one and the third one, and so they were special to me the first time I saw them. The first one, it feels like such a film of that time. It feels like kicking and screaming. It feels like sure. singles. It feels like I hate to bring up Clerks or Chasing Amy, but and because I don't want to do that, but.
An independent movement.
Yeah,
film.
I didn't enjoy it as much the second time around. I do think that Sunset is the best of the three, and again, you guys are spot on. The ending of this is the most ambiguously satisfying ending for any of these three films. I'm glad I saw them again, but I can't see revisiting them anytime soon.
Wow.
I know.
I think you're going to get some tweets.
I'm just going to go right now. I'm just going to stop recording and go upstairs.
Well, I can't really objectively look at these films just because of the story with me and my wife. And in fact, we watched Before Sunrise last week before we recorded that show. I don't know if you guys have heard it, but she made an appearance. Mm-hmm.
And
usually she would not have much to say about most shows. Yeah, Assassination of Jesse James, she probably fell asleep. I don't remember her take, but it's not her thing. That's more my thing. But these movies are right in her wheelhouse. And in fact, she came back from a conference. Actually, I was afraid that we wouldn't get to it in time, but she got back right in time for us to rewatch it last night before we had this podcast, and it's a special movie, and this was our first time. And for those who didn't listen, we went to France and went to all the locations, mostly in order, and then we stopped basically when they got off the boat, because then they get in a car and go to, well, I'm not going to say where they go after that, so it was really neat to watch it again, you know, kind of put the subtitles on, and then, you know, together would say, oh, remember that. Oh, that was where we got, you know, Le Pire Cafe. That was where we got our picture taken in front of that heart, which actually didn't turn out well, so I didn't post that one. And I did find about a dozen photos that I'll put a little link in the show notes to the Facebook album if people want to see the actual sights of Paris. So this is pretty much, as you said, Jameson, I would say it's the perfect movie. But also, as you said, Doug, and maybe because I've seen it so many times, and this was 10 years later, some of the things, the little gestures, like in the last third of the movie, the little subtleties that really moved me the first time. Maybe I'm just a jaded asshole, having been married for 10 years, which may be true anyway. But they didn't move me as much. However, that those last 10 minutes, knowing exactly how. To the word, really, or to the dance gesture, how it was going to play out, still moved me. And actually, you know, we watched it in the dark, and as the credits rolled, I wasn't crying, but I was flustered.
It's okay. It's okay. You can say you cried. That's all right. I'm
not one of those guys that's embarrassed about crying in movies. Uh-huh. It happens, but I just don't do it much, even when I'm. So I think that's impressive when a movie moves me to almost that point or to that point. And this one got me flushed enough to where I didn't want my wife to see. Also, I knew she was tired and she probably didn't because she drove most of the day. But I think it is the perfect movie. But again, it's the perfect movie for me. It may not be for everybody, even though a lot of people I know like it. But it's one that has sentimental value. So I'm sure you have a film like that, Doug.
Sure.
What is it?
I don't. I have no idea.
He has no sentimentality whatsoever.
No, not it's just a cold, dead heart inside his body.
He is mannequin. That jaded asshole. Mannequin.
That's right.
RoboCop.
I tear up a little bit when his hand gets blown off.
All right, well, that's tough to segue away from, just because I almost cried right there. No, I didn't actually, but I could. Before Sunset is, and I agree, Jameson is the best of the three. I wasn't a fan of the third as much, but having watched the first two and kind of picked up on things that I think the third speaks to, I think I'm going to like it a little more this time. In fact, Andrea shared my little Facebook album and said, and she made some snide comment, and she didn't like the third one at all. Mm-hmm. So she made a snide comment about going back to Athens, or I forget what she said. And I told her, well, we need to go to Athens just to get into an argument. So, all right. So anyway, moving along, we have some news things, and I don't know how we're running. So yeah, we're running a little bit long. So I might breeze through some of these. But next week, what the release that's coming out is Canoa, A Shameful Memory. And I tend to go in blind to these things, but this is one that I had never heard about, and I haven't really researched a whole lot. Just want to kind of let the experience wash over me, kind of like I did with Tree of Wooden Clogs, which maybe didn't go so well. But I'll start with you again, Jameson. Are you familiar with Canoa? Is this worth being interested in?
No, not at all. Criterion put this on my radar as well. So I mean, I didn't have sort of the same experience, just, you know, going blind. I don't want to read about it. I just want to experience it. I had the same experience with Tree, Wood, and Clog, so we'll see. Hopefully it goes better.
Yeah, hopefully no. Yeah, I'm not going to get into that. But Philippe Casal is the director, and it's a Mexican movie, in which I'm glad I like more movies from Mexico. I think that's interesting. So, Doug...
I'm the same as you guys. I don't know much about it. I started to read about it and then kind of thought better of it, and I decided, listen, I'll pick it up. I'll check it out when it comes out. I really enjoy the cover. So
yeah,
that's
it. Yeah. I did too. So we're flying blind. I guess tune in for probably not our next episode. I don't know when we'll talk about that, but yeah. Because we have releases coming up, so next week will be a big show. So there were a lot of little tidbits of news this week. Some interesting, one not so much to me. So, all right, well, the big deal, and I loved this, but Agnes Varda visited the Criterion Collection. So we got another Polaroid of her in the kitchen, I believe, just like we got for Wong Kar-wai. And then we got an Instagram of her napping in the Criterion offices, which I adored. And she's aging. I don't know her exact age. In her mid-80s, I think, so... I get it. I'm mid-40s, and I might just take a nap there. So, Agnes Varda. So, of course, we have to ask, what does this mean? There's already a lot of Agnes Varda in the collection, but there's not a lot on Blu-ray, and I think we would all be itching for that box set to get upgraded. I don't know. What do you think? What does this mean, Doug?
It has to mean that something is being upgraded, whether it is a box set, which I would kill for. That would be fantastic. But to be honest, you give me Cleo 5-7, I'm happy. That's it. If that's all it is, if that's all this is, I'm completely satisfied, but I would not complain with more.
Yeah, and they've been making this a habit of extracting films from box sets. So I don't. For some people, that's great. Some people not so much, but Cleo Vitus, I actually haven't. That's the one I haven't seen. But there's Le Bonheur is I think an underrated, underseen. So I would love to see. And also, it's a beautiful, vivid color. I think it pairs as well with the Demi films more than anything she's done. So I would love to see that, and of course Vagabond. So yeah, I want that set. Damn it! are you a Varda fan, Jameson?
Yeah, definitely. I would love to see a box set, maybe an upgrade of, you know, the existing one. But I'm a Doug. I'd be happy with just Cleo 5-7, if anything. But I'd like to be greedy and get a box.
So obviously I'm not going to just run out and watch that on Filmstruck or I actually have the DVD too, but I'll probably wait for the Blu-ray if it does happen. Would you guys say it's worth waiting for to see it on Blu-ray, or do you think I should just knock it out?
Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
I was going to say it's it's an easy watch. It's a pretty quick watch, and I don't. I mean, I always would love to see things in their best possible version. But if you're watching it on Filmstruck or you're going to grab the DVD, I think it's worth watching as soon as you can.
All right. Well, I'm going to stop the podcast and go watch it. So I just want Agnes Varda to come and nap in my house. we'll have some coffee. Well, maybe not coffee. We'll have some water, and then she can just sack out, and then maybe we'll watch one of her films. All right. Well, there was another tweet from somebody by the name of Ben Palmer. He's Conductor Ben on Twitter. I don't know him, but he tweeted, first listen to Neil K. Brand's dark new score for The Lodger. Looking forward to DVD with Orchestra of St. Paul's for Criterion later this month. So, and I'm just going to throw it out there that on the Blu-ray upgrade show, I put The Lodger and actually Early Hitch. I think my wish list was for Early Hitch box set. So haven't seen it, but this looks pretty promising. These little Twitter leaks, again, shame on these people. a lot of times they end up coming true. So, all right, I think, who did I start with last time? All right, okay, Jameson, Lodger, or Early Hitchcock in general. Are you a fan?
Yeah, I am. My mother is a Hitchcock nut, so I grew up with a ton of Hitchcock. Anytime it was on AMC or when TCM came around, TCM, we were just like planted watching Hitchcock movies. The early ones, I've seen. I don't know if I've seen all of them. I've seen most of them. I've seen The Lodger, but
oh, you have okay.
Those don't. Since I was so young, they don't stick in my mind as much. I can't really remember The Lodger that well. I remember liking it.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of silent... The Lodger is silent, yeah, because it was remade later. In fact, we talked about that with Cole, and I think we wondered whether it would be a box set or a double feature, but the remake was released earlier this year, so that's not going to happen. I think Hitchcock kind of ramped up... and I do like his mid-30s stuff, but I think it's really The Lady Vanishes and 39 Steps is really when he hit his stride. Have you seen it, Doug?
I used to have a early Hitchcock VHS box set.
Nice.
And this was part of it. I'm not going to complain to get any Hitchcock. I would much rather have a box set because this individually, it's not a very good film. He hasn't quite found his footing. There's nothing, you would not know that Hitchcock made this unless you were told. It's not one of the best, but I mean, I'll get it, of course. I almost have to at this point. But if it's in a box set, I would much rather take it that way.
Okay. All right. You heard it here first. Doug hates Hitchcock.
I know. This is so bad. I'm always coming off really badly when I go into close up.
and the Before trilogy. All right. Well, there was another little, and this is the one that I'm not so excited about, although I haven't seen it, so I really can't speak authoritatively. But King Lear by Godard. There was a tweet that Criterion Cast retweeted. Tom Luddy said that Criterion's going to be releasing Godard's King Lear. This would be unusual. The only late Godard they've released was slow motion Every Man to Himself, which I liked. Okay, fine. I thought it was a good, interesting way to cover late Godard. And I thought they kind of did, you know, punctuate his entire later career in that one disc pretty well. So I would have been okay with that. I've heard pretty terrible things about King Lear. So have either of you guys seen it? Jug shaking his head. That works great on podcasts, by the way.
I didn't even know it was a thing. I guess I'm not that familiar with Godard. I didn't know this existed.
All right, Jameson, are you familiar? Care?
Yeah, I saw it on VHS. I think like in high school, and I hated it. It's not good.
That's about what I've heard.
Yeah, it's really bad. I don't even know what to say about it. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody.
this could be this year's immortal story that some people just really hate it, but maybe there are a few out there that find the art. And I'm definitely not a Godard apologist. I'm a more Godard tolerant. I there are a few films that I really like of his, but I'm not roped in even on his most famous works. In fact, I think my favorites are Pierre Le Fou and Weekend. So I guess that mid-60s period is my cup of tea. But no, not too excited about it. I guess, sure, I'll take it, I guess. I'll watch it. It does have a big cast. I'll give it that. So in the mid-80s, pretty much a who's who. Something you'd see in a Godard film. At least not an 80s star system kind of cast. So, okay, well, we'll move on from there because apparently we don't care. And so the next thing was Phil Rosenthal, who is not on my radar at all. He showed up at at the Criterion Collection, and he did a little closet video, and I always love these closet videos. This one I enjoyed, too. He is pretty blunt and pointed with his comments, and I picked up some nice ones, but I have to trash him for... And also I have to trash the person that was recording it for their comments on Make Way for Tomorrow. I think there's a female voice that said that was the saddest movie you'll ever see. And then Phil Rosenthal said, okay, well, I'm not in the mood. I'll put it back. Dude, it's a masterpiece. It is sad, I guess, in a way, but in the most beautiful, mm-hmm. heartwarming way. So did you guys watch this video? Did you have any takes?
Yeah, I watched it. I love the closet videos as well. I don't know why he was there. I had to look him up, and I was like, okay, wait, everybody loves Raymond and other stuff that I really wasn't 100% familiar with. So, you know, I guess he was just visiting. I have no idea how people get into that closet sometimes. But no, I watched it. I enjoyed it. I would definitely, if he's listening, which I'm sure he is, you should go back and get Make Way for Tomorrow. It's amazing.
Yes. Hopefully he's looked at social media. I saw a few comments out there. Yeah. I never watched Everybody Loves Raymond, so I have no idea. I did look through his filmography, and there was nothing that really jumped out at me. Mm-hmm. I'm the Spanglish, which I can't stand. Mm-hmm. So if we want to get Adam Sandler back in the collection, Doug's shaking his head.
I think we're done.
We're good with Sandler. But anyway, I do enjoy those videos. Sometimes I wonder if they bring people into the closet that aren't going to have a release come out. Like they had Sean Baker in there. They mm-hmm. had the Wolf Pack. Had a whole slew of people. They had people from documentaries. There was that one with the punk documentary. So mm-hmm. you could go to Criterion for those. I'm sure that there's exceptions, but yeah, it seems like a lot of the times those people don't get releases. Yeah. All right, Doug, what's your short take?
My short take is Dine for Living. It's a pre-code Lubitsch comedy, which is an amazingly funny film. And again, I keep talking about TCM, but I was watching this on TCM in standard definition for about 20 minutes. And then I went, wait, I have this downstairs. So of course, I grabbed it, put it back on. And it's wonderfully progressive. It's a weird, like, I don't know. It's pre-code. It's like a film about menage a trois, basically in the end. But the performances are wonderful, and it's just, if you haven't watched it because maybe you don't like that classic Hollywood thing and it's sitting on your shelf, take a look. It was a huge surprise to me. I enjoyed it.
Cool. I haven't seen it. So, all right, Jameson, I guess we're going to race through these.
So I recently revisited the piano. I'm a big Jane Campion fan. My wife and I are doing the 52 films directed by women thing this year. It's cool. Pretty cool. And Jane Campion's one of my favorites, so it was kind of a no-brainer starting point. I hadn't seen it in a really long time, and it sort of had the Mildred Pierce effect on me, where I feel like I didn't really appreciate everything that was going on when I initially saw it. think it's a really beautiful movie. It's got that weird sort of that weird tone you only get in a New Zealand or Australian film. very left of center. The performances are all wonderful. It's a very complex film.
It's Harvey Keitel's butt, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. Harvey Keitel's butt's in it. It's just a really haunting, kind of great starting point for Jane Campion, I think. I think it's like as accessible as a Jane Campion film could be, maybe.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, definitely.
And the reason I wanted to talk about it was because a bunch of Jane Campion's films are on Filmstruck right now. Mm-hmm. And if you're unfamiliar with Jane Campion, I strongly suggest that you fix that. I think right now on there, they have The Piano. If you need a starting place, they have Sweetie, which is a great movie as well. There's a Blu-ray, a Criterion Blu-ray of that. An Angel at My Table, also excellent. There's a Criterion DVD of that, if you're so inclined. Mm-hmm. I think there's a fourth one on there right now.
I should ruin it for you that they're all leaving on April 6th.
I know. I was going to say that's actually the reason I wanted to bring it up. They're all leaving on April 6th, as Aaron said. So you should make a point of seeing them before they're gone, or just buy them.
Yeah, yeah. I'd love The Piano to come out Criterion. So okay, mine is a little different. Mine is Carnival of Souls, and as people that listen to my stuff or Criterion Cast stuff, we did a Criterion close-up episode of Carnival of Souls for the last Halloween, so it is weird that it's showing up back here as a short take and I'm talking about it again, but I have an interesting angle. I actually watched the Riff Tracks version of it, Riff Tracks live recorded, and we actually commented on that when we did the episode, that how the irony of them doing making fun of a movie that we're doing that Criterion's doing a reverential release about. So that's my weakness is MST3K, and I know it is for you as well, Doug. Mm-hmm. And I get into the Riff Tracks guys too. I don't watch all of them, but I like to watch the big ones. They have Samurai Cop coming up this year, which I'm really excited about. So anyway, this was not the Criterion print. it was actually in color, which I didn't know that existed. I guess it's public domain, people have colorized a lot of things. So it does look a lot different, as you can imagine. I'm generally against colorizing films. In fact, categorically against it. But sometimes it looked okay. But no, it was apples and oranges to the Criterion version. But one thing that was funny is you know, basically they're making fun of it, and it is an art film, or at least the pacing is slow. It's not one of these scare-a-minute horror films that even the bad horror films that they make fun of. So I thought it was an odd choice for them to do, even when it was announced. But seeing it in execution, they did make fun of it some. I don't think it was their best. It wasn't the best fitting for their comedy, mm-hmm. because they kind of made fun of it for being a little slower, not much happening, like, where are we going with those guys, that sort of humor. And there's this one scene where she's driving, and she's just looking, people that are fans of the movie can probably remember a few of these scenes, kind of just this pensive expression on the lead's face. And one of the riffs was, this is the look that got Criterion Collection's attention. So I thought it was cool that they acknowledged that it was a Criterion release. Meanwhile, and I'd say these guys usually have pretty good taste in film, but not in this case. Of course, part of the fun is taking the piss out of these movies too. So are you a fan of Riff Tracks, Doug?
Oh, I am. Yeah, certainly. And I would... I think Kino actually used one of theirs for one of their releases, or maybe yes. a handful of their releases. I would love it. I would love it if they got those guys in on some criteria. I don't know what it would be, but boy, just to do it, just an alternative commentary track. Why not?
Maybe like Eating Raoul or something, or maybe Valley of the Dolls. Oh, boy, that would be something.
That would be fantastic.
So yeah, King Lear.
It could art sing King Lear. I don't know. Or The Immortal Story. I think they would.
Yeah.
They might fall asleep in that one. So yeah, I'd say it was exciting or it was fun, but not if you're gonna go for a riff tracks, go for one of the really, really cheesy bad films. I think Samurai Cop will be right up their alley. So right, well, we're gonna race through Filmstruck. So I'm just gonna kind of outline a few things, and then we'll get to some speed round. Maybe spend a little more time on the Criterion Channel. So, just quick question: do you guys have Filmstruck, both of you?
Yes,
I do not.
Doug,
I know. Listen, I live in a house where my wife won't watch any of these movies, and I have three kids. I have to. That streaming has to be Netflix or Prime. It can't be about me all the time.
I play. Actually, Mark didn't have it until a few weeks ago. So, in fact, and I think he got it just for this podcast.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'll just kind of run. Well, then you haven't had a chance to look through these little curated groupings, but I will. There was one thing on the main channel. They have a new structure of they've been releasing these little groupings, or you know, the Cinema Passport for a certain country for the last several months. So what they did is they put categories up. So they have, and so now when you go to the main channel, these are the first four buttons you see under the featured image. So the new one is, so there's originals, which showed up a couple weeks ago, and then they have a category of the masters. So if you want to go in and say Antonioni, I don't know if there's Antonioni on there, but just the director series will be in there. Like probably Jane Campion is probably in there. And then icons, so if it's maybe a cinematographer, maybe an actor. And then they have a category for Cinema Passport. So there's Passport of Iran recently, and I think they did some other. I don't have this in front of me. You don't memorize Filmstruck, but I do think it's a neat organizational tool. And I as the service grows, it kind of evolves. So whereas like the Criterion Channel is basically just the most recent content is cycled through, whereas here they're storing it a little bit. So I think that's actually a good move for them. So anyway, I'm all right. Speed round time. Are you guys ready for speed round, or do you know what it is?
I know what it is. I mean, this is a perfect chance to show my ignorance.
Exactly.
I listen to your speed round sometimes. And I'm sitting there going, "How are they answering? How do they have anything to say about these people who I don't even know?"
Well, that's where they say pass. So yeah, my goal is not to make people uncomfortable. My goal is just to make people have fun and be spontaneous. So, all right, well, I'm going to do a few of these. So, speed round. Here we go. All right, Doug, Laurence Olivier.
I think Elizabeth Taylor said he had an affair with Richard Burton.
Okay. Hey, did you study for this?
No. No, I actually just saw something about that last night.
Jameson, Laurence Olivier.
Speed.
First thing that comes in your head, or pass.
Shakespeare.
Yeah, okay. Shakespeare. Me, a bit of a ham, but quite actor. Good actor. And good director sometimes. Yeah. Very theatrical. All right. I'm going to have to give you some context for the next one.
Not taking your pants off, are you? What's happening here?
I'm actually pulling up Filmstruck. All right, Carnival of Sinners. This is so I'll just read these off. Quaidon, Le Man du Table, Black Sunday, Eraserhead, Oni Baba, and Scanners. And I think I know where you're gonna go, Jameson. 10 seconds. Comment on those.
I'm going first.
I kicked it to Jameson. Sorry. Go ahead, Jameson.
It's okay. All right. Eraserhead, of course. Oh, boy. 10 seconds on Eraserhead. Fry Your Brain, Meet Lynch.
That's good. All right, Doug. 10 seconds on any of those.
Quaidon is my favorite. Scanners is terrible.
Okay. Quaidon is 3 hours. I haven't heard of... Le Man du Table, and I haven't seen Black Sunday, but I really like Baba. Or maybe I have. I have seen Black Sunday, damn it. All right, The next one is a category called Child's Pose. So this is, it seems more like, you know what, I'm just going to skip this one. This is World Discoveries.
Yoga?
You guys haven't seen this, see okay. these, so never mind. All right, child posing. You both, well, I know you have kids, Doug. Doug, Child's Pose, comment.
I don't know. It's a yoga move. That's all I know.
Downward dog. Jameson, Child's Pose.
yeah, same thing. Yoga move.
All right, I'll reference the BBC viral thing, the child posing as the guy's given an interview and strutting up to the computer and just posing there. How about that? All right, and then the last one is Coming Home, which has an image of tiny furniture. So, Doug, tiny furniture, comment.
I have avoided watching Tiny Furniture because everybody hates it, but at some point I'll see it.
All right, Jameson, Tiny Furniture.
Don't bother, Doug. It's okay. It shouldn't be in the collection. It's obnoxious. It's grating. It's terrible.
As for me, I haven't seen it either. Same as Doug. But I'm kind of oddly curious. I kind of like seeing a train wreck. All right, I'm gonna keep. Actually, I'm gonna end the speed round. All right, speed round's over.
I do have to say. I know you dump it in later, but I love the music. It's your speed round music is just so much fun.
What are you talking about? It's playing right now.
Oh, that's what I mean. I mean, I love the music that's playing right now.
It's great. Yeah, it's groovy, isn't it? I'll credit Davey. Dave gave that to me. So okay. He pulled it from some game show. And I'm sure I forgot the game show, so he'll remind me of it when he hears this. All right, Criterion Channel. So we had a couple things. So I'll start out with the digital spine. Blakeslee famously, at least famously to us, said he doesn't care. But I think it's a good way to talk about the movies real quick. So My Winnipeg was this week's digital spine. I wrote a blog post about it a little while ago, or you know, maybe a couple years ago when it came out. Big fan. So, Jameson, are you a fan of My Winnipeg or Guy Madden in general?
Yeah, I'm a fan of Guy Madden in general, and My Winnipeg is definitely my favorite. I think it's a beautiful movie. Just really fascinating, beautiful filmmaking. It has the story of the Jets leaving, which, as a hockey fan, is pretty cool to see in a Criterion film.
Yeah.
and he really taps into what, you know, an NHL franchise leaving Canada feels like.
And yeah, that's a big deal.
To me, that hit me hard.
Yeah, well, you live in L.A. That's like the reverse of what happened with you guys with the football team coming up. So,
yeah.
But that happened to L.A. a couple times, too. Doug, are you a fan?
I find the visuals very intriguing, but I do find Madden a bit challenging. I know it's a personal issue, but I don't gravitate toward his work. I think this is on me. I know this is on me. That's the problem.
Doug, you are the wet blanket.
I know.
you are Doug Hader McCambridge. No,
well,
actually,
if it was just on RoboCop, bring me back for that episode. And that's it.
All right. When Criterion releases it, re-releases it.
Well, there, yeah, there's the DVD.
The upgrade. That's right.
Yeah,
I do actually. I can meet you halfway there. I do find Guy Madden challenging, and in fact, a lot of his work left me cold. But no pun intended, left me cold. My Winnipeg actually did leave me very cold, but I was blown away by it. It's one of my favorite modern documentaries, one of the most creative, the way he shows how quirky truth really is. And I don't know if it's all truth, I forget, but it is sometimes truth really is stranger than fiction. So, okay, well, I just released a Ozu episode this morning, which means this is not going to come out today, but maybe in the next couple days. But there were 7 Ozu films added to Filmstruck, which is a nice convenience. So, and of course, you guys haven't had a chance to listen to the episode because I dropped it maybe a couple hours before we recorded. And of course, we just did, you know, an hour and a half on Ozu, so we'll speed round-ish this, but... thoughts on Ozu? Are you going to watch these? I'd say they're minor, not minor films, but they're less famous films. So are you guys going to, well, I know you won't, Doug, but if you had Filmstruck, would you watch these Ozu films?
If I had it, I would, because I feel like that's a pretty big blind spot for me. I may have only seen 2 Ozu films.
Doug,
I've enjoyed them, so there's no reason I shouldn't watch more.
Okay. Well, you saved yourself there. Jameson, Ozu fan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that on Filmstruck right now, they have, I don't even know how many titles. It's quite a few. So get the trial, Doug, and give it a go.
Get the trial, Doug.
I will. I need the time. I got to wait for summer. Again, everything happens for me in the summer.
Hashtag get the trial, Doug. That's
get the trial, Doug. But yeah, I want to check out some of these. Really early ones like Woman of Tokyo and Where Now, the Dreams of Youth and ones like that I haven't seen. Yeah. So I'm going to catch up with those.
Yeah, hopefully they'll stick around a while. I think they will. I think the Ozu, I think they have the rights. I don't think there's probably, I could see maybe them doing a digital spine of one of the Blu-rays, but I think the minor films, and I'm not saying quality-wise, I'm saying reputation-wise, the minor films are probably going to stay. So, okay, well, we had our two double features. We had the short plus the feature, and this week, well, I know you didn't see it, Doug, but there was Rosemary's Baby, and there was the short called A Story for the Maudlins. So since Doug hasn't seen it, I'll set it up a little bit. This could be bullshit. They basically took an extra from a pivotal scene of Rosemary's Baby, found some photographs, and extrapolated his life. What happened to this guy after he was an extra, it was an uncredited extra. It might not have actually, this might not have even been his name. I don't know. I haven't researched. I don't know if anybody has. So it's about a 20-25 minute documentary that just uses photographs to put together a narrative of his family. They go overseas to Spain and some oddities. I don't know if it's true or not. Actually, Michael Hutchins was put it online and was talking about it, and he thinks it was probably not true. But either way, it's an interesting story. I was a little mixed on it. I thought it was a little plotting. I thought maybe there was a little bit, I don't know. Did you watch it, Jameson?
I did. I had a similar reaction. I think it's probably bullshit. And I think it could have been 10 minutes instead of 26 or whatever it is. It was an interesting experiment, but it didn't do much for me.
Yeah, I think, and if it's true, then I think there wasn't enough material. I agree. It should have been a 10-minute short. Basically just, all right, this is a wacky family. Here you go. But and if it's bullshit, then basically you could take any, that's a film idea. You could take any random character in any famous movie and develop a movie around them. So I guess the question is, should you? So I would say I'm all for experimental film, but no.
Well, I'm glad you're saying this because I watched the trailer just in prep for this. And I thought it looked fascinating. I was like, I'll watch 20 minutes of this nonsense.
You might like it. Michael loved it. So I don't want to poo-poo it. I thought it was interesting. I think I put 3 stars on Letterboxd. But I'd say when you get the trial,
give it a shot. I'll get the trial.
It's damn 20 it. Minutes. I can, okay.
Why haven't you gotten the trial hashtag? It doesn't work like that. All right, so there was a double feature. The Friday double feature was Diabolique and The Soft Skin. And I think the reasoning here, the connection, I think thematically and tonally, these movies are very, very different. One's a thriller, one's a romance. So I think the way they sold this was these are films by French heavyweights, Clouzot and Truffaut. Hey, they kind of rhyme, too. Yeah, I don't think it's the best pairing. You could just basically take any big director, but is there anything I'm missing? So, Doug, I'm sure you've seen both. Have you seen both?
Yeah, I've seen both. I love them. I really enjoyed both of them. I mean, Diabolique, I think, is phenomenal. The Soft Skin is pretty good.
Yeah, I probably like The Soft Skin more than you. I think it's good romance. Jameson?
Yeah, I've seen them both. I own them both. Sort of the same way. I think the Diabolique is basically a masterpiece. And Soft Skin, pretty good. For a Truffaut movie, maybe just okay.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Actually, the description on Filmstruck is, two masters of French cinema explore deception and infidelity in this Hitchcockian double bill. So I definitely see the deception and infidelity. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say that the soft skin is Hitchcockian. Although you could say that any Truffaut has Hitchcock there. So, all right, we made it, guys.
All right.
We are done. So I think we talked about what we've been doing at the beginning. So, but quickly, if there's anything you guys want to throw out, I'll just throw it out there. Anything new?
No, nothing new. Just go and find Good Times, Great Movies if you want to listen to me and my co-host talk about terrible movies from the 80s.
And Jameson, any revival screenings planned or booked?
Well, I would say early planning. It's the 10th anniversary of the film's release this year, so I intend on doing something. And I may have had a conversation or two about it, but...
Or maybe not.
or maybe not. I might have just talked to my dog about it. But,
I'm sure your dog loves the film.
He does love the film. He's sat through it many times now.
I bet.
But yeah, I'm hoping to have something happen in some form toward the end of the year.
Cool. We'll talk in a moment about where to find that and get updates. I've been busy, and I can't remember if I'm repeating myself every podcast because I do this a lot. But so I did the Eclipse Viewer yesterday, which will come out in a couple days. We're doing the big Julien Duvivier series, so probably obscure for a lot of people, but absolutely recommend you guys get on board and watch these films with us. They are something special. If you like French film, French masters, and he's kind of an underseen, underappreciated master that's worth rediscovery. And then this dude, Ozu, you may have heard about. So as I mentioned, I just put that show up. So, all right, well, we're going to finish this up with our piece of flair. So, Doug, what's your piece of flair?
My piece of flair, and I first heard about this on the podcast Off the Shelf, hashtag bring back off the shelf. It's not going to happen. Somebody else do it.
Please. Yeah, Brian, recruit somebody.
That's right. But anyway, Lionsgate has put out a collection, their spine numbers and everything, of old Vestron videos. It's a Blu-ray line, but Vestron, if you remember back in the day going into your video store, you'd see these VHSs in the horror section with a big V, like a big sans serif fat V, and you always knew it was going to be a trashy horror movie. But they give these things, they stack these releases. It's amazing. And stuff like Chopping Mall and Waxwork and Lair of the White Worm. I think there's only 9 releases so far, but there's multiple commentary tracks and recent interviews with these people. It's a lot of fun. So if you're into that goofy nonsense, they're doing it right.
Nice. Yeah. Wishmaster, was that one?
Wishmaster. They're coming out with a 4 Wishmaster box set.
Wow.
They're all awful, but I'm going to get them. It's so much fun.
Hey, you know, we talk about our art house classics, but there, and I just mentioned Riff Trax, there is a certain beauty about bad movies. You know, The Room. In fact,
and just the love and care that they put into these bad movies, like listening to audio commentary by the sound designer and the director and the actors, and I'm like, how? Who cares? Yet I'm sitting there with a copy in my hand. So,
actually, I'm going to cheat when it gets to my turn. I actually have 2 flares. I just thought of one that I can't not mention. But Jameson, do you have a piece of flair? Something going on?
Nothing going on. I'm gonna have to make a plug. I'm sorry.
No plug, please. But, yes.
One More Time with Feeling is available for, it looks like pre-order. It looks like the Blu-ray got pushed back. It's temporarily out of stock on Amazon, but you can rent or purchase the digital download of One More Time with Feeling, which is Andrew Dominik's documentary about the making of Nick Cave's album Skeleton Tree and the death of his son, Arthur. It's a beautiful movie.
I really want to see this. So I mentioned earlier, I'm a huge, huge Nick Cave fan, and that was such a brutal tragedy. I've only listened to that album a couple times, a few times. It's not an easy listen, but it's amazing. So I'm really looking forward to that, and can't wait to get it. So it's going to come out on disc soon too.
Yeah, I pre-ordered it, you know, when they put it up, and it was supposed to come out on March 3rd. I'm not sure what the issue is, but I'm sure they'll sort it out and it'll ship. But it's available right now as a digital rental or download on Amazon Video. Not on Prime. You have to buy it. But yes, it's a beautiful film about grief and about creating art. And it's just, my bias aside, it's a great movie.
I think bias is fine. I just looked it up, and actually Amazon says temporarily out of stock. So maybe it is out, and maybe demand exceeded supply. So one can hope.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I think I might have to pre-order it. So, all right. Well, I have two pieces of flair, but I'm going to be quick. One exciting announcement. I'm a big Louis Malle fan, and their Artificial Eye, who we mentioned before, they have a 10-disc Blu-ray box set that's coming out June 26th. See, Doug, this is the kind of stuff off the shelf we'll talk about. So
I know.
I try to cram as much as I can in here. But only a handful of these are on Criterion Blu. The rest, I think, are pretty much all on DVD. But since they're out there, and I know that some of the Tarkovskis, there was some criticism about the controversy about the scans, the transfers, I'm hoping these will be good. I think generally Artificial Eye is fine. I think that was just an anomaly. But hopefully, since those are out there, we know that Elevator of the Gallows had a 4K restoration. So bring those to Criterion, especially Elevator of the Gallows. That will sell.
Please, please, please. Yes.
Please.
And we have Black Moon. I love Black Moon. I know a lot of people don't, but I think it's fantastic.
I sure do, yeah.
If you can have Black Moon and Zazie, the Metro, Danzel Metro, you need to have Elevator of the Gallows. You lead with that. And yeah. Au revoir, Les Enfants. My cheat piece of flair is The Room. And I kind of made me think of it earlier when we were talking about bad movies. So there was this documentary called Roomful of Spoons. And I don't know if you guys heard about it. I might have talked about it at some point. This guy went and investigated Tommy Wiseau's life and made a documentary. And at first he had Wiseau's cooperation. But then I guess what happened is he found out some of the mystery behind Wiseau. And actually, apparently he found out where he's from and a whole bunch of bombshells. You might remember some things going around social media about it. So Wiseau slapped him with restraining orders. Some of them were really, really funnily written. Like you could tell that Wiseau might have written some of these that came from, quote, lawyers. They had funny typos. And he was not allowing the film to be played at festivals. And meanwhile, it was getting great reviews from the people that saw it, which is, people that appreciate The Room. So it has been, because of the legal problems, it's been under the radar for a while. And we didn't know it. I don't know if he knew he could release it, because you don't want to get a lawsuit. But I always thought it would someday come out because fair use and all that. So it is coming out. But I guess the theatrical plans are shelved, and he's doing a DVD-only release, hopefully Blu-ray too. But so it's coming out in June from his website. So I'm going to put the link in the show notes. There's a trailer there too. And so what he did is he'd already made the film, but apparently he cut some of these legal challenges into the film, and he teased it as it's the film that Tommy Wiseau does not want you to see. So I can't wait for it. We'll see it in a couple months, but go check that out. So, all right, where can we find people? All right, Doug, we know where to find you.
Yeah. Just find me. Don't find me. Nobody wants to find me. But you can find the show GTGMcast on Twitter and find us on Facebook.
No, actually, everybody should find Doug. Doug does great stuff. Yes, yes, yes.
It's not worth it.
And Plain Archive coming back in the summer.
Plain Archive, summer 2017.
And I'll have the link to the iTunes feed because some guy is too lazy to put up a website.
I did not make a website. I'm the worst person.
Yeah, that's hashtag Doug's the worst.
New website 2017. I have a lot to do this summer.
This is going to get a little mileage, I think. So, all right, Jameson, where can people find you?
All right. For the Jesse James stuff, you can find me at facebook.com/JesseJamesRevival and on Twitter at twitter.com/JesseJamesRev, R-E-V. It's too long. And you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/JamesonMcGee. And that's Jameson with an I-E, not just the E.
You probably get that a lot. Yeah,
I do.
So it's Jamie's son.
Exactly.
So, actually, I have a brother named Jamie, and So his is spelled Jamie. So yeah, we'll put the links in there, and I'm almost positive I follow you. Twitter is kind of a mess, but I probably do follow you, but I probably don't see enough, so I'll have to figure out a way to rectify, to maybe get notifications, or Facebook notifications, that's what I'll do. So do you post pretty regularly when you have screenings and stuff announced?
Yeah, when we're really active, I post quite a bit. Right now it's been sort of, you know, kind of a holding pattern, so I only post occasionally, but it'll ramp back up this year.
Right, because he's just talking to his dog about it right now.
Yeah, right now my dog and I are, you know, hashing plans and all that. Yeah. So.
And we'll bring Andrew back in soon. So, all right, guys. Well, this has been a fun show. Enjoy the rest of your day, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. Get the trial done.
Thanks for having me.